Well, thousands of community and health workers have served notice of an indefinite strike due to begin next Tuesday. These are workers who work in independent organisations called Section 39, Section 10 and Section 56 agencies, so-called due to the funding relationship with the HSE. They want parity with their counterparts employed in the HSE and also some other organisations like Section 38 organisations where pay scales are tagged to HSE scales. Sarah, explain the background to this and how we got to this point.
Yeah, so as you were saying, there's about 5,000 health and social service workers are due to begin strike action on Tuesday. An offer was made of 5% pay increase, which the unions voted against. Talks were happening over the summer. There was a breakdown in talks and we've basically voted for strike action. The pay discrepancy, they're saying, is about between 10 to 20% was heard in the Dáil today. I think it's around 12%. So it's they're working in similar roles, but they're not getting the same pay because they're not working directly for state agencies. There was some positive movements in the Dáil this afternoon, though, from Junior Minister Anne Rabbitt. She said her department was in discussions with the Department for Public Expenditure about additional investment in the sector. Roderick O'Gorman also said a meaningful offer was being worked on. So there were some positive movements from them. It was interesting to hear some of the Fianna Fáil TDs speak about this. You would swear they were coming from the opposition benches. John McGuinness in particular was saying, you know, pay them what they're due, respect them. He said there was money in the coffers to settle this. It was a disgrace and a shame that they had to threaten strike action, and it was the most appalling example of bad management he had seen in a very long time. So that's kind of the situation at the moment, but I think I wouldn't be overly surprised if things developed over the weekend.
All right, and but no details of what that meaningful offer would be, and that strike still scheduled to go ahead for next Tuesday. Regina Doherty, let's start with you. What do you think they should be paid?
So first of all, can I just respond to a comment that Sarah made with regard to members of government parties agreeing with what we know will probably be the final outcome, and please God, it'll be before Tuesday, as if we were members of the opposition. I think having the freedom of calling something out when it's wrong is a real liberty in a party. And for far too long we've had, and I was one of those people, for far too long we had people trotting out the standard lines that have been issued by the press office or government information services as to, you know, the holding right. pattern. This is plain and simple wrong.
Sure. Okay, but
a nurse is a nurse, whether she works for a Section 38 or a Section 39.
Okay, but they were cut in 2010.
Everybody
middle of a crisis.
Yeah,
2013
was.
The troika leaves town. 2015-16 the economy's doing better, and you were a minister between 2016 and 2020. You could have acted when you were a minister. Why didn't you?
First of all, it wouldn't have ever come to my desk. I was never the minister.
I know,
for
but you sat around the
I don't
table.
Think it ever came to cabinet. So first of all, let me think.
Sure.
Okay. But acknowledging that this definitely has been an issue for far too long. And so, yes, everybody was cut between the years of 2010 and 2013 and 14. The difference here is that the people in the HSE and the people in the Section 38s who do have a connection between the salary scales, and we're talking about healthcare providers here now, so we're talking about nurses, occupational therapists, speech and language therapists, healthcare assistants, everybody that has a professional qualification that's equal, whether you're Section 38, 39, 56, 10, or you actually work in a hospital for the HSE. If you're a nurse, you're a nurse. There should be a minimum pay scale, and that's regardless or irregardless of where you work. And the difficulty here is that when people in the HSE and Section 38s, when FEMPI was unravelled and they were given back their money, these people weren't. And that was wrong.
Right.
It was wrong then when I was at the table,
sure.
And it's wrong now. And what we need to do, and we've had some disingenuous remarks in the last couple of weeks by our own politicians, insofar as that offers have been made, that they balloted, that some of the community workers actually accepted it. So we can say yes to you and say no. All of that's nonsense. If you're a nurse and you're doing a job, there should be a minimum pay scale that's linked to across all of
okay.
our sectors.
And do you regret it's taken this long?
You know what? There's nobody that should feel that, you know, this shouldn't be fixed. And what's I'm absolutely sure about is that it will be fixed, that we will get to a scenario where they still won't have pay parity because they won't get paid for maternity leave, they won't get paid for their pensions, but they might actually be able to retain staff in our Section 39s. And places like Prosper, places like the Irish Wheelchair Association will be able to keep their staff because the first port of call for their staff are the Section 38s.
HSE.
Yeah, or the HSE. And they're robbing these people particularly when these organisations have to provide 65% of the services in the disability sector and in the mental health sector. So it's wrong. It was wrong then, it's wrong now, and it needs to be fixed.
All right. Rory O'Murcher, you're an actual member of the opposition. presumably you're opposed to this. What would you give them?
Well, look here, we have to look at parity. We're talking about comparable grades. In fairness, you're going to get a certain element of agreement here. Now, I imagine a number of people probably have been somewhat shocked that government spokespeople are in, and you would think if there was that much dissension at government level that this would have been dealt with beforehand. Look, the Federation of Voluntary Service Providers and some of those citizens who actually avail of those services were actually in Leinster House today. Of course that's a complete disaster that they have to come in for that. Of course it's a complete disaster that people that don't want to do strike are going to do strike across multiple unions, because you're dealing with people who, I have no doubt, even from speaking to them, are going to feel guilty on the day, because they know that John and Mary, that they provide a service for in this disability services, or whether we're talking about homeless services, addiction services and whatever else, that they are going to miss out. So look, we're just after having a budget. Here's the bit I don't understand, where there was no new monies that were put aside in relation to dealing with this particular issue, and there should have been a huge kick up before this.
Right.
Before
just to be clear, what does parity mean to you?
Well,
penny for penny, condition for condition, pensions, the lot.
We'll see in relation to all that.
For pensions, so that's the thing. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Like, they're not. All they're asking for is a fair wage. So that if I work in hospital and I get paid £10 an hour, and Rory works in, you know, Prosper Fingal, and he gets paid €9 an hour, it's just not on. It's not fair.
Yeah, at the minute we're getting the Irish Wheelchair Association and whoever else, and people are using the term poaching, but let's be clear, you're not talking about highly paid people in the first place, and the cost of living crisis is impacting that greatly that even people who have a loyalty to these organisations are leaving because they have no choice. And the madness of leaving to do the same job within the HSE is absolutely criminal.
All right.
So justice needs to be brought to an end. And look, I welcome the fact that Anne Rabbitt says, and Roderick O'Gorman, there's a conversation with Deeper. Really, that should have happened beforehand. We need to see delivery before we get to a strike and the impact that's going to have on families.
All right. Suzanne Rogers from Social Justice Ireland. Social Justice Ireland, back in the dim and distant past when there were social partnership agreements and people sat around and decided what pay increases and everything else were going to be. So parity now, but should any public sector agreement that looks at future pay increases also link these organisations into that and have increases into the future?
I think it's a much broader picture than that. Like, I would even question why we have these two parallel systems providing similar services anyway. Like, I don't understand why we've put all of these, what are common or public goods, housing, education, healthcare, out to the private market.
Just to be clear, why aren't they HSE workers in a functioning HSE?
I don't understand why they're outside of that system anyway. So that's kind of my starting point, is just raised eyebrows going, hmm? So I don't understand why we're even at this point to a certain degree. I know for a fact, like, none of these staff want to strike. I mean, they want to be able to carry on and do their job. There was a report from TASC in June of this year, again, that looked at this particular sector, looked at the burnout from staff, looked out, you know, at the low pay and conditions, looked at the fact that there was no payment, maybe, you know, for travelling between jobs, that you're an hour here, an hour there, all of that sort of thing. This is, we're talking about low paid jobs. And I spoke to my colleague in the sector earlier on this morning, when I said that the sector kind of, you know, coming at this from an advocacy point of view, Dr. James Casey in the Independent Living Movement Ireland, like, they're a disabled persons organisation, and they are very much in favour of staff getting a pay increase, provided the staff get the pay increase, that the money's just not going into the system. And then the person who's actually working, who's coming to your home to care for you, is only going to get a tiny fraction of that. And they've also, they would really, what they would like to see is that it's a personalised budget, that the person who's getting the supports, the disabled person, is getting a payment, a personalised payment, and that they're actually in control of the supports that they access. And he said that's done in other countries, that's the model in a lot of other places. Mm. They have no control over their own
supports. Finland,
for
example, if you have a disability, you're born in Finland, there's a budget done early life, and that's, you know, used to purchase service throughout the rest of your life. Sarah, there was a Labour motion passed on this that was allowed through by government. Is it a year ago? So, I mean, it seems strange that it's come to this now, when there was the same level of agreement we see around the table here tonight that far back.
No, absolutely. And like Labour have been raising Section 39 workers. Sinn Féin have been doing it as well. Louise O'Reilly in particular brought it up at leaders' questions last week. But I think up until now, the government have been saying, go back to the WRC, resume talks. Whereas this evening, I think, there was a recognition from Anne Rabbitt and Roderick O'Gorman that this strike action is going to happen on Tuesday and there had to be some sort of movement on their side.
Right, nobody arguing against it in the Dáil tonight.
No.
It was consensus that there needs to be something done about this. Regina Doherty, just that point Rory O'Murcha was making about provision in the budget for this. I mean, is it going to be jammed tomorrow and people told that after the public sector agreement they're going to get their money?
No.
And would you envisage any public sector pay agreement would also result in further increases to Section 39 organisations?
So, you know what, the most important thing, first of all, I don't think money is the issue, right? So whatever it costs to give them the wages that they're looking for, which would be the equivalent wage in other organisations, I think the money is there. I think the most important thing is that we maintain the link again. We had a link beforehand, even though some politicians will argue that we didn't. We had a link before. That link needs to be brought back. There's some Section 39s at the moment where they're paying 2020 and 2021 HSE pay scales. We need them to be paying 2023, and when we get to 2024, whatever that happens to be, that's what they need to be able to pay then at the same time. So the link is the link. If you're a nurse in the HSE, in a Section 28, a 29, a 56 or a 10, whatever organisation you're working for, if you're a nurse, you should be on the same pay scale.
Right.
If you're a healthcare assistant, if you're an SLT, an OT, it should be
job.
The same. So the link is what's really, really important. And as I said earlier...
Why does it take industrial action to get this level of movement? People threaten an indefinite strike starting Tuesday and then we see movement.
Well, so to answer your question is I really don't know why we always bring these things to the brink, because we always know that they get resolved. But the problem I have, and I've had numerous meetings with both Leo, Varadkar, Pascal Donoghue over the last number of weeks, I've raised it in the Shannon, my colleagues have raised it in the Dáil, as have all of our oppositions, including Rory's party. Everybody wants the same thing. And nobody that's going to go on strike on Tuesday wants to go on strike. And it is unedifying that, and I don't blame them because they have no other choice to do it, but it's unedifying to see people who use the services having to do videos to try and explain to Egypt's like me why it's so important that we get this service. And the reason we're having the conversation now is not because it's just about pay, even though that in itself would have been enough for us to have the conversation. It's about now delivering of services. And the biggest champion for Section 39s in this country should be Brendan Glaster, and he's not.
Bernard,
I beg your pardon. And he's not. These people have to provide 65% of the services.
Well, he can't be a champion for them if he doesn't have the budget, he can't be the champion.
Well, sorry, health is never a problem because health can just seem to spend money whenever they want to. They never have an issue spending
Sarah
money.
Sarah Burns, health is never a problem. Regina took issue with something you said earlier. Do you want to take issue with health is never a problem? Has it been looking problematic?
It's been
this
looking
week?
Very
been
problematic this week.
The minute, yeah.
But just to go slightly back to the Section 39 workers, I think it's important to acknowledge that, the TD said themselves that none of these workers actually want to go on strike. They feel really guilty. They know the service users are feeling great stress and great anxiety that they won't have them there on Tuesday. So just to say that. But health has looked very problematic this week in particular. Yesterday in the Dáil, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald spoke about Stephen Donnelly being thrown under the bus in relation to this year's budget. The deputy leader, Piers Doherty, was kind of reinforcing that point today, saying he'd been hung out to dry in relation to additional funding. So I think this is sort of, when the budget is announced, you look at the different social welfare measures or what's been done in housing. And in the last day or two now, the focus has been really on health and what Stephen Donnelly looks like he hadn't been able to get from talks public expenditure.
I think the last time I heard buses and washing lines being mentioned in the same breath, it was in Paul Weller's town called Mallis, Regina Doherty. Is that where Stephen Donnelly lives at the moment?
No, I don't think so. And so I'm not surprised that there isn't new money in health this year, because at some point, and Sarah has been covering this for donkey's years, right? At some point we need to see the structural reform that we keep talking about. We can't just keep spending a billion extra.
Is that how Sláinte Care is?
So where is that? And for years we've been listening to the fact that we're getting there. Oh, well, then we had this interruption of 3 years for COVID because, everything, and there was obviously major disruption because of COVID. But, COVID's long gone. It's put in a box in most of our minds, thankfully, in the back.
Sure, okay. But the Fiscal Advisory Council doesn't believe the health figures. It thinks that there hasn't been adequate provision made for health. We see an argument between the Department of Health and the HSE, where the department is saying you're asking for too much. Yeah. The HSE says we're not asking for too much, and then there's an overrun. So it appears the HSE is right in that argument. Then we hear money is never an issue. Yeah, so what's the
nothing,
truth?
There was nothing as unedifying as the display of emails between Robert Watt and Stephen Mulvaney. And actually, what that did for me was cause despair, because if Robert Watt came into the the Department of Health to fix all of the ills that he had been giving out about and all of the rest of us had been giving out about for the last number of years, how he treated Stephen Mulvaney, the senior most financial man and a donkey's years person working in the HSE,
let's personalise it, because it's a relationship between
the
department of
about.
Which he is the chief accounting officer and
so what
and,
results
and the
have
HSE.
We seen in the last year, in the last 2 years post-COVID, have we seen any structural changes? Because I don't think we have, and we haven't really been speaking about it because we've got so wrapped up in the cost of living and other issues that are obviously very much front and centre day to day, our housing crisis, the cost of living issues for people. And so health has kind of taken a bit of a backseat in the last couple of years and has gone 1.3 billion overrun last year. So I'm not surprised that it didn't get new money this year. What it got was the money it spent last year that it didn't have to spend. And you know what? We all know what will happen next year is whatever new money they spend this year based on increased demographics and stuff, probably get that again. So does anybody have any confidence in the fact that we're actually going to see structural reform, even a conversation about it, even get Sláintecare back on track to see, well, where are we now after, you know, the interruptions of the last couple of years and the extra spend that we like? So I don't see that.
Rory O'Murgh, the problem is not the money. The problem is an absence of structural reform.
But like, am I not right in thinking that it's already like, you know, it has been widely reported in relation to the fact we need more beds? Look, we all know where the trolley count is. And at this point in time, we have no new monies, as has been said earlier. We have no new beds planned. At one stage, Stephen Donnelly, and that's why everyone thinks the towel has been thrown in and under the bus and all the rest of it, is on the basis of no sign of these 1,500 beds. And if you had read, obviously, the budget speeches at one stage, it looked that there was 2,500 initially, 2,500 beds, but that's beds that had already been delivered and staffed. Now, we all know the issues that exist in relation to retention of staff.
But is it a money issue in your view?
Well, here, some of it's a money issue in the sense if we need more beds. Otherwise, we're going to have the same issue. We're going to have the same issue in relation to people leaving because of conditions. You're going to have the same issue that you're going to end up paying big money for agency, and round the garden we go. I am very glad to hear that there's obviously dissatisfaction among government representatives. We need to make sure that that's, you know, highlighted and brought to cabinet and somebody gets their act together in relation to delivering. And we can't just put, like, at the end of the day, the Minister for Health has responsibility, but there's a wider government involved at this stage. And I suppose that's the idea why people are saying Stephen Donnelly asked, didn't get. Is it a certain element of accepting, throwing in the towel? We're not going to deliver any major changes in health, so we'll just accept it's a basket case. But that's not good enough for the people out there that are suffering.
All right. Suzanne, long before the budget was announced, Michael McGrath hinted darkly that these overruns in the Department of Health would have knock-on effects in other areas. Now, the social protection budget is bigger than the Department of Health budget, so where should we look for these knock-on effects? And who, in your analysis, are the worst affected by underspending in any particular area?
Where do you start with that? I mean, that's the thing. Like, there was one line in the speeches on Tuesday, which was that temporary measures would address temporary challenges. And a lot of the framing we're getting is, well, we had Brexit, then we had COVID, then we had the war in Ukraine, we had the cost of living, inflation issues. And you're kind of going, so like pre-2016, we were doing just fine. I don't understand even that framing, that context. But again, with health, as you said, like IFAC, was it 900 million, I think, for existing level of services that they had talked about 2 years ago. And what we got this year was 808 to cover existing level of services and new budget provision. But for me, everything is joined up. You're not going to fix your health overspend unless you sort out your housing and your social welfare. Poor housing equals poor health. Poverty equals poor health. There was that report from Vincent DePaul and Micheál Collins 2-3 years ago. The government, again, these are only estimates, 4.5 billion a year trying to deal with the damage that poverty does. Imagine what you could do in the health service with that. You know, you could transform the health service with that. So almost looking at again, like a shortage of GPs. That's not because we have a shortage of trained staff. Like, Ireland is a really, we're exceptionally well educated. That's because somebody who goes through the whole process of becoming a GP, goes to a medical college, then can't afford to live anywhere, can't afford to start a business. So it's this siloed thinking within government departments. It's this short-termism, I think, within government
housing
departments.
Housing impact on everything.
So the structural problems aren't limited to the health sector alone, Regina Doherty. What Suzanne Rogers is saying there is that there's an issue with the structures of how government operates.
So I'm not sure I would 100% agree.
Well, what bits of it would you agree with?
So the two topics that Suzanne touched on was housing, and we all know the issues and the persistent issues that we have. They are getting better. They're getting resolved. Schemes are being tweaked. We have 400 people a week availing of a new mortgage to buy their first home. We have social houses delivery like we haven't had probably in a generation. So things are starting to get better. Now, they'll never be as fast as the opposition would like them to be, and that's fine. And some of us are frustrated by some of the kind of lack of delivery. Cost delivery cost rental seems to be very slow on the uptake at the moment. The actual delivery of houses through our county councils is very, very slow. We have more housing agencies that are delivering social houses than our county councils are. So there's still tweaking to be done, but they're definitely isn't a money problem. And so when you said,
what is the problem? Brexit? COVID?
Well, look, come here. We've done, countries will always have challenges. We've done the COVID, we've done the Brexit, we're in the crisis of a cost of living crisis, or in the midst of a cost of living crisis, and thankfully, hopefully coming out the other end of it by the time this winter season and spring is over. There'll always be crises. But what Suzanne is right in saying is that we have a very highly educated, determined workforce. We have near in full employment in the country at the moment. Anybody that wants a job can get a job.
How do you mean there'll always be crises?
There'll always be challenges in countries, sure, otherwise you wouldn't need...
Challenges is one thing, but there'll always be crises.
Right, so there'll always be challenges for any government, regardless of the shape or form of that government. And whether it's you have loads of money to spend or you have no money to spend and you're cutting, there will be challenges. We have challenges in housing and we're addressing those things. I wouldn't agree with you insofar as that we have challenges in how we spend our social welfare funds. I looked on yesterday or on Tuesday with envy at the amount of money that was being delivered on behalf of the Social Welfare Department through deeper. Back in the day, I would literally have to be fighting with Willie O'Dea as to who'd get his story out for a fiver. And the real argument in those days was when the fiver would start in January or whether it would start in March. Now we have social welfare increases of 12 euros a week. We have across the board lump sum payments of 300 and 400 euros across every single sector within the social welfare budget. So like we're in a really different space now than we were a couple of years ago. We have a green paper on the cost of disability arising from the Commission's report. We're in a really good place.
I'll come back to you on this. Rory O'Murricu.
I think if we're talking about housing, we can't just say that systems are being tweaked and we're on the right road, just further back than we should be. Look, the fact is government set out again, 2.6 billion was their spend last year to not make the targets that are too low, and 2.6 billion is the spend this year.
You would have gone for 5
housing.
Billion, would you?
Well, we would have gone, for another 1.74 billion. And look, the fact is we would set our target at in relation to delivery of let's say cost rental, affordable and council housing, 21,000. That's the sort of targets.
How much of the money would be going into building bricks and mortar?
Well, here. Like you see, here, you're talking about a huge amount of it now, and you are talking about the county councils, you are talking about the AHBs, you're talking about absolutely everything. And there are still issues in relation to the bureaucracy, in relation to procurement and tendering and all those other particular issues, which does need to be dealt with. We also didn't, even when we're talking about planning and we talk about on Bord Pleanála and all the rest of it, we know that there hasn't been a sufficient amount of
resources. What's the easiest fix in housing that the government has?
Well, look here, we keep talking about modern methods of construction and we just keep talking about it. And I have yet to see any major outside of private companies doing it. If we're talking about timber frame, if we're talking about 3D concrete printing, if we're talking modular, and this is where you're getting your best bang for buck, and in some cases in need of less workers to do it. But and the other thing is, in some cases, we have people building the wrong things and they need to be redirected.
Okay.
But see, if we don't get serious, accommodation is impacting on business. It's impacting on retention.
That's ridiculous. First of all, your targets are bogus because nobody has a clue what they're based on. And nobody has an idea of who you'd actually have building your houses.
What specific target are you talking about?
All of Sinn Féin's targets with regard to housing. So the problem we have is that we get challenged by Sinn Féin for not setting higher targets. What's the point in setting higher targets if there isn't the people there to build them? And so what we're doing is, and what we've done in Rebuilding Ireland, is set realistic targets, and we are hitting them. So 29,000 houses were delivered last year against a target of 30. There's going to be more than 30,000 houses built this year. The difficulty we have with your targets is if we've had talk for years, but no methods of delivery. You're just going to randomly pull numbers out of the sky and not tell any of us how you're actually going to build.
We are not in government.
You're going to get rid of the house to buy scheme.
Hang on a second. No, don't make me pull down the faders here. We're going to have one voice at a time. Let's let him respond to that. The people aren't there, Rory O'Murricu. The method's not there, is what Regina Doherty is saying to you.
Well, I've already said there are problems in relation to the planning process. That's something that can be addressed. We can make sure we don't have the difficulties with Bord Pleanála. We know that there are, as I say, procurement and tendering issues, but we are also saying there isn't enough money in there. We are saying at times people are building in the wrong sphere, and at times there have been tax breaks and whatever else that have pushed people into the wrong sphere, that we need to make sure at this point in time what we need is people building homes. Well, here, let's be clear. Anything at this point in time, the major emphasis needs to be on building homes.
Yeah, we are. 400 people a week, 400 couples a week are buying their own home right now.
No, here. And here.
29,000 last year. Yes, but the problem is.
Not bogus targets like Sinn Féin has. Let's be absolutely clear. The problem is the people who are looking on daft.ie tonight, looking to see if they can get something that is a half decent rental. First of all, it'll be, even in the likes of Dundalk, you could be looking at €2,500. You could be very lucky and get it for 1,400.
But the other thing is,
you will find very few of them.
Okay, what about that point on personal? I think back even during the boom, the ESRI warned that when the economy was booming and construction was booming, if you poured more money in chasing workers, you'd see construction inflation go up, the cost of projects going up, and the knock-on effect to other parts of construction, like housing, would also go up.
Well, look, at this point in time, and we accept that we have dealt with obviously huge increase in cost due to inflation and whatever else. But the fact is, we need to build houses. The fact we do not have a sufficient amount of supply. Like back when this state had no money, it was able to deliver housing. See, if we don't do that, we are going to absolutely fail.
We're talking about
child poverty and all the rest of it. We are putting people into homelessness at this point in time. We are not delivering for those at the bottom. We are not delivering for those at the middle.
Finally, Simon Harris yesterday announced €67 million. For 16,000 new craft apprenticeships. That's what this government is doing. It's recognising that we have deficits. We're filling them.
And we have been talking for years about workforce planning. We don't have bogus targets.
We have targets that we can actually achieve.
Just a second. On the craft apprenticeships, one of the biggest issues on that was you can get as many craftsmen or companies to sign up apprentices. The difficulty is in delivering college hours to see them through to full completion so that they're able to certify jobs. And there's a major sticking point there.
So when you look at what Simon Harris has done is that the routes to college has been drastically changed by the announcements he made 6 months ago. So we're now going to utilise our ETBs up and down the length and breadth of the country to do year one and year two.
And this is going to get them staffed up in order to provide those college places for which there were thousands on the waiting list even before COVID.
That's the aim. It's a recognition of that we have a deficit of craftspeople. It's putting in the apprenticeships and it's putting in the new models that are different to the historic models of CA.
I just want to let Suzanne...
And it should have happened earlier, yes. Suzanne Rogers. Been talking to Simon Harris, whoever was doing the job beforehand, of course.
Where do you stand on the ambition, the spend and the targets and the method of housing in this country?
I suppose it's funny when you're saying about the opposition will never think that there's enough. And I kind of think, well, maybe it's the population of Ireland that don't think that there's enough. Like we have... Every month we have a new record of homelessness figures and our targets are too low. And I think that is part of the problem that it is way too low. Like it's still like we've had this huge increase in population in quite a short space of time. I appreciate we can't really, you know, you do need a crystal ball for a lot of this stuff. But decisions that were made 30 years ago have arrived us at where we are today. So when you look at what we did to social housing 30 years ago, I mean, you're talking about all of these people who were able to buy a house. I'm talking about social housing. I'm talking about genuine public social housing. Not everybody can afford market rates. We stopped building them. And we have, again, this sort of trickle-down mentality, this filtering-down mentality that if we build high-end houses, rich people will move into them, middle class will move into where they moved out of, the poor people can go in there, and then the homeless can go into where that. That isn't working. We need to, coming from the bottom up, we currently have about 9% of our housing stock is social housing. We really need to be up around 20% of our housing stock needs to be social housing. But the difficulty there then is that that puts the government in direct competition with the private market. So I don't know how that's going to go down. We could see in the budget where landlords got a tax credit. All landlords, I presume, will be able to avail of that tax credit. Renters get a tax credit, but immediately half of them can't access that, because if you get a housing subsidy, you can't access it. And then even those who are eligible to apply for it, if you're on a low income, your tax, the amount of money
and
you
there
get
are
back,
plenty of people in the workforce on low incomes who fit into that category.
I mean, the Parliamentary Budgetary Office did a piece on housing affordability last week, and I wrote this down because it blew my mind. 43% of the population are on a salary over 30,000. Which means that, it's been a long week, I can't do the figures now, but that's 56% of us are on salaries under 30,000. So how does that work? And again, what they were looking at was between 2012 and 2022, salaries went up by 27%, rents went up by 90%, and house prices went up by 75%. So to give you another music quote, according to the Sleaford Mods, the wage don't fit.
Right. Sarah Burns, this budget will be judged as, you know, more so than perhaps other ones, on the pillars of health, housing and cost of living. So we're, you know, day two after the budget. No major landmines as yet or U-turns being pulled. But on the cost of living issues, what's the discussion been like on that?
I suppose Heather Humphreys is probably one of the more happier ministers, should we say. And she said herself, like, it was the largest social protection package in the history of the state. And, you know, we have the energy credits. There's the increase in social welfare by €12, the double payments at Christmas. But some of the advocacy groups have come out already and said, you know, they're kind of like Christmas treats being handed out. And I think it's actually after Christmas when your electricity, when your gas bills start coming in, that's when you have to pay them, and you see these massive rises, and even with the energy credits, how are people going to afford these? In terms of housing, and I'm open to correction on this, but I think the Taoiseach himself has said that targets are too low and that they do need to be revised. And, you know, there's various measures. We have the tax credit for landlords, the tax credit for renters, the mortgage interest relief scheme. But I think I just didn't see a whole lot there for first-time buyers in particular, and, you know, trying to get them or into the market or give them some kind of a optimism as to how they might one day buy a house.
All right. Regina Doherty, the size of the budget is one thing, but how targeted it is another thing. There are a lot of universal measures in there, such as the energy credit. Everybody is paying more, but that hurts some people more than others. Now, based on your own experience in the department, how come these measures can't be more targeted for people who need them most?
So you see, I don't agree with you insofar as that there's a good mix in this budget. I never was able to do targeted measures or universal measures because the money just wouldn't have been there. And so the people that I would have looked after for the 4 years in social protection were those that were most at risk, and in particular lone parents, to try and unravel some of the damage that had been done during the cuts of, you know, 2010 to 2014-15. I think there's a really good mix, because I'm mindful that there is an enormous amount of people in this country that have no other income other than the single income that they get from the state every week, right? And they don't have the ability to go out and do a few hours work on a Saturday or a Friday. But there's an enormous amount of people who pay for everything out of their wages because they go out to work 40 plus hours a week and they get no help. And that's not fair either. So we have people that in that squeeze middle that do deserve to get help with their electricity bill, given that everybody's electricity bill or gas bill went through the bloody roof last year. There are people who are paying €3,000 and don't get sued for their children to go to college, that deserve to get a break and a recognition for that. Those families are paying for their kids to college again, or the kids themselves are working all the rounds of the hours that they're not in college. Like, you can't just suddenly say, as Suzanne said, somebody who's on €35,000 or €40,000 a year, Bob's your uncle, you're on your own. You know, best luck. There are people in that bracket who literally do not have enough money by the time the end of the week comes. So it's up to us to make sure we look after them when we can, in a measured way. And I think that's the blend and the mix.
But in order to do that, you need to give universal benefits to millionaires.
Well, you know what? If that's the case, and there's very, very few millionaires in this country.
Well, there's an increasing number of them.
Well, and you know what? That's the measure of the economy doing well, which is a nice thing to see also as well. Because
but
we 6.7
billion euros saved in the second quarter of this year, according to the CSO. Do the people who've contributed to those savings of 6.7 billion really need the energy credits and the other measures?
You really know the answer to that. And we always use poor old Michael O'Leary as the example when we talk about him. Does he need help with his electricity bill? No, I'm sure he probably doesn't. But in the main, the vast majority of people whose numbers became very evident to the world and sundry during COVID, when we had to design the PUP to fulfil the income supplement that they were losing when the world shut down. We know how much people are earning. We know it doesn't stretch to the bills that come in, and particularly over the last number of years, of increased energy costs, increased petrol costs, increased cost of living, food, and all of those things happened despite people's best intentions of getting up early and going to work week in, week out. And I don't think we should make any apologies for spending taxpayers' money, giving it back to the people who are providing us with the taxpayers or the tax euros in the first place.
All right, Suzanne Rogers, what do you favour targeting, or do you see the advantage of universal measures in that there isn't a cliff edge for certain cohorts of people where, you know, you hit 40 grand, you don't get that entitlement anymore?
Just when you mentioned that cliff edge, like there was a discussion earlier on about like the increase in national minimum wage. And I suppose, again, going back to maybe that kind of siloed thinking that national minimum wage will go up, but then there isn't a corresponding, as you were saying, like, you know, if you're talking about sort of work disincentives and cliff edges, there isn't a corresponding then increase in thresholds for certain payments or thresholds for certain benefits. So I was at an event earlier on today and they'd crunched some numbers. Now, they did say it was kind of back of the envelope stuff, but a couple, two children working 60 hours a week on national minimum wage in 2023 would be eligible for the back to school footwear and clothing allowance, but not in 2024 unless the threshold goes up. Mm. And that's according to the Roadmap for Social Inclusion, which is the government's anti-poverty strategy. They review the thresholds every 2 years. So you would think it would be an automatic thing. And if you talk to anybody, like, say, Age Action will say that they get people who look at the increase in the pension and then go, oh, am I okay? Like, am I actually going to be without something now? Because if the increase goes up in the pension, will that impact on my social housing eligibility? Will that impact on eligibility for other things? So I worry about those kind of cliff edges. But I suppose to go back to your point about, you know, having to, as you said, having to fight for the 5 or having to fight for the 12 euro, like, that's why we're, you know, advocating benchmarking, so that it takes away all of that arbitrary 5 or 10 or 6 quid, 7 quid. You know, fighting over this and really, like, grounding it in what people actually need. At this particular moment in time, 220 euro is what you get as a single adult. That has to put the roof over your head, food, heat, light, your haircuts, your clothes, your shoes, your transport, your bin tags, your TV licence, your mobile phone top up, personal care, education. You know, I could go on and on. Like, that is, when I keep saying almost impossible, that is impossible to do. So, and if you look then at the minimum essential standard of living, the basket of goods that they would price, a single adult needs 276 euro just to be able to provide the basics. That doesn't include accommodation. If you go bankrupt in the morning, the Insolvency Service of Ireland will allow you an allowance of 250 euro a week. And again, that doesn't include your accommodation costs either. So it's not, this extra 12, while it's very welcome, and I appreciate, as you said, there's millions being spent, but as an individual who's at home struggling to make ends meet on 220, it's not grounded in reality.
Rory O'Murchy, where do you stand on universal benefits? I mean, if everybody gets it, there's less for some, so...
Given, but look, in fairness, because I had scrolled it down beforehand in writing that's utterly illegible, thresholds, and even when we're talking about one party proposing 12 quid versus 20 quid and we all do this, we really need to take that out of the sphere. It really has to be in a place where it is related, it's index linked. I think there would be general agreement with that, because we end up in a completely ridiculous place. And of course, yeah, you get a huge amount of people who are not necessarily earning huge money, but believe they pay for everything. And I suppose what they're missing out on is it's probably universal public services. It's the fact if we could get real in relation to Sláinte Care and delivering something. And even if they don't, they accept, I'm not getting it tomorrow, but eventually I will. Now, it's very hard to just get away from housing, because it just impacts on everything. Because you talk to people who you would say are solidly, soundly middle class and doing very well. At this point in time, their issue is their kid that's living in the box room. And even if they're out they will tell you the problems that they have in relation to that rental tax credit, which has gone from 500 to 750 by the government. But our difficulty with it, it's not accepting that, as was said earlier, even by Regina, this is an emergency, this is a crisis. This should be absolutely a ban on any increases for the next number of years, so we can get to a point of making that delivery as regards supply. And the other thing is, you'll also hear loads of people that'll give out about the bureaucracy and that they need to get the LPT certification from their landlord and whatever else, and they're just afraid and they're not doing it. So, you know, I think they're the sort of things we need to deal with.
Some of that, some of the issues around claiming the renter's tax credit might need to be looked at to simplify them, Regina Doherty.
So it is surprising, and I know people have 2 years to claim it, and historically in Ireland we do things at the very last moment that we can. But there is, to my mind, people not claiming it, and maybe it's because their landlords are not registered and they do need to be registered. But we're certainly not going to give, you know, money to people who are not tax compliant. And I appreciate, obviously, that's the landlord and not the renter. So maybe we need to look at that. But like, the incentive is there. I take issue with what Rory says, particularly given the Sinn Féin. The first thing they came out with yesterday was that this was a landlord's budget. We have to stop vilifying landlords, because we're not talking about institutions or pension funds. We're talking about fellas or girls, you know, who bought an apartment, then met a wife, you know, and bought a house and still has the apartment and rented it out. We're talking about normal people who mostly it costs them money to be landlords, and we're trying to encourage them to stay it. And keep vilifying them is not going to encourage them to stay.
The
I don't know whether 75 quid a month is going to encourage them to stay, but us calling them the back of the neck all of the time certainly isn't going to help.
The landlords that are leaving. That is the finding. This isn't going to make
helping.
Any difference.
All right. You're not helping.
Sarah Burns, what's the child poverty unit doing?
It's looking, I think, at child poverty measures in particular, the poverty cycle, you know, how disability and welfare measures, that kind of thing.
All right. And in terms of how does it translate into policy implementation, Regina Doherty? I mean, there's a Department for Social Protection. Why is there a separate child poverty unit needed, and what can it show for its existence?
Because we live in a world of silos, children probably fall, or services that get provided to children fall under maybe about 6 or 7 different departments. Unless you have a lead in the Department of an Taoiseach to draw all those together in a committee where you sit down with action plans and say, what's the story with your action that was supposed to be done last Tuesday, next, you know.
Is that not what a Minister for Children is there for?
Yeah, well, you see, the difficulty is that the Minister for Children doesn't have a seniority over the Minister for Housing, the Minister for Education, the Minister for Mental Health, the Minister, and that's the problem. And so when we look at something as important as children, the delivery of services, whether it's occupational therapy, speech and language therapy, mental health services, across the myriad of things that are responsible, you need the Taoiseach's department, and that literally line by line, target driven by dates and accountability at a kind of a monthly meeting to make sure that it does get delivered. And that's what they are hoping.
Suzanne Rogers, have you seen any improvement since the Child Poverty Unit was set up in the Department of an Taoiseach?
I've read their programme plan, and they break it down into 6 headings, and the first one is income supports and joblessness. So that straight away, it is an acknowledgement that poverty, while it's not always about money, is about money. And I think what we really have to remind ourselves is that children in poverty aren't living in poverty separate to their families. These are families that live in poverty. There's an intergenerational transmission as well of poverty. So children who grow up in poverty tend to be adults who live in poverty, who again tend to have children in poverty. They were also looking at early learning and childcare, reducing the cost of education, family homelessness, pathways to access.
So we've seen some of that. We've seen reductions in childcare costs.
All of that. Pathways to services, children and family need, and arts, culture and sports opportunities. But I suppose I keep going back to that, to the income bit. And when I was doing our post-budget analysis, I spent so much time typing one-off, 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 one-off. That's not really addressing that long-term income adequacy issue or inadequacy issue. And I know for myself, I would much rather a pay rise than a bonus. That's right. Worth much more to me in the long run.
All right. The Child Poverty Unit, Rory O'Murachu, Sinn Féin, does it keep it or scrap it when you're in government? If you're in government.
Well, look, obviously a number of things have to happen for us to get, you know, before we're in government. But look, I think it's very hard not to accept that there should be this, that it needs to be absolutely focused. Is this the case? I've put in a number of Taoiseach's questions, and sometimes it's generalities that you get back in relation to this. Look, the absolute fact is we're talking about childcare, and I can get into that. You know, the government's offering, what, 25% reduction? We had said 50%. But I know in the last while, when I had an opportunity to bring up the issue in relation to childcare facilities, I dealt with a number in Nundalk that would operate in disadvantaged areas and whatever else. And the fact that some of them were under pressure in relation to making sure that they would continue, and that they're the sort of issues that need to be dealt with. And you're talking about scenarios there where kids who may not be in really, really good circumstances aren't necessarily being looked at. And that can be extra meals. That can be obviously the social connection and whatever else. And you could be dealing in some cases with parents that have real additional needs and requirements and all the rest of it. And if we're not going to make sure that we support these sort of organisations. So, yeah, no, okay. there should be a unit like this, but we really need to see it doing something, because you'll find it very difficult when you go through the budget to see here is the outworkings of that particular unit and department. And that's before we get into the fact of child homelessness and all them other issues.
I just want to go to the listeners here. Hi, Late Debate. I'm recently divorced, mid-40s, earning twice the minimum wage. After rent, bills, maintenance and working at least 8 hours overtime every week, I can afford to save €50 per week towards buying a home within an hour's drive from my child. I'm looking forward to moving to my new home by 2078 for my 100th birthday. Thanks, says Tom in County Cork. Somebody else contacting us, I assume via WhatsApp. Surely budgeting maximising bureaucracy is the problem to a major extent, says Paul. Please ask the panel why standing charges are so high, helping the budget to reduce energy costs. Yet I recently got a bill that was 80% standing charge, and can it be raised more with no warning at any time, paying just to be connected to the grid? And somebody by email saying, you would think Ms. Doherty's crowd were out of office for the past 12 years, Regina Doherty says.
I like the Richard. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. We're back after this with RTE at the Public Accounts Committee.